If it's happening today, we're talking about it now. Join us, 203-333-9422. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
So this morning, I open up my Science Times, which is always my favorite section of the weekly paper. And big article, big headline, Tracking Wildlife, Scientists Aim to Save Animals Using a Project Called Icarus, which uses tiny sensors and equipment aboard the space station. The only thing I know about Icarus is he got too close to the sun, as they said in that lyric from Hamilton. But cited prominently in this piece about how scientists from space are going to track wildlife down here and why is our next guest, Walter Jets, who received a PhD in zoology from the University of Oxford in 2002 and is a professor in the Ecology and Evolutionary Biology Department and an adjunct professor in the School of Forestry and Environmental Studies here at Yale, where he arrived in 2009. At Yale, Walter Jets founded and directs the Yale Center for Biodiversity and Global Change and its Max Planck Yale Center for Biodiversity Movement of Global Change, an international Max Planck Center, which launched in 2018. He has many different papers he's published. He is very interdisciplinary, working with a lot of colleagues around the globe, and clearly a mover and shaker in what will be this new fascinating way in which we can track wildlife. Professor Jets, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Hi.
Hello, Lisa, and very happy to be on your show.
I'm very happy to have you on. So, Professor, first of all, you have to tell me about this tracking wildlife thing from space. What is going on, and how is it going to work?
So, first of all, I agree with you. I'm not sure whether Icarus is indeed the ideal name for it, given the fate that Icarus had.
Exactly.
It is a nice acronym. I'll spare you how it came together. But putting that aside, it's indeed a most fascinating project led out of Max Planck, Germany, but now with a growing set of international collaborators. And it's sort of a key a project within the Max Planck Yale Corporation. And what's exciting about this effort is that it essentially scales up that idea of tracking single animals, and some of you may have seen images of or be aware of this idea of putting a tag on an animal and then running around with an antenna and trying to triangulate it and ultimately get its location. That's sort of how this was done in the 60s, 70s, and it's really quite a key way of studying animal behavior, and has brought about all sorts of important insights around how animals move, around conservation corridors, around conservation science at large. Now, this effort, Icarus, that receiver that's sitting on the space station, is now scaling this up to a global methodology. So something like almost like a satellite that goes around the globe and collects data. This receiver goes around Earth and is able to read in animal tag location information, and you're suddenly going from a single individual behavior to the ability to study biodiversity movement at planetary scale.
So it was very interesting because they said, number one, the Icarus project or the private enterprise around it, that the sensors are $500 per, which is much cheaper than it used to be, and they're much lighter. They're physically lighter for the animal to carry around. Is that true?
That's true. So it's already been possible to track animals through satellite. It's a little bit like if you know your satellite phones, right? So a similar sort of idea has been around for animal tags that were and are quite large, need big batteries, and in a sense, the same way you can use a satellite phone to make a call, these tags would relay their location via satellite back to Earth, and modern buoys, for example, do that. And okay. That's really, really advanced science quite a bit, especially in the oceans where they're able to study sharks and whales and their movement through that sort of technology. But it's been really, really expensive and required really large devices. So it only worked on large animals. And sort of a rule of thumb is that a tag should never be larger than 5% of an animal's body weight, ideally much smaller than that. And so for many birds, except the really large ones, we weren't able to study them over large scales or on moss or in a way that many scientists in many different places could afford to do so. So that's really what's so transformative about Icarus, is that we're able to now put these tags. Many scientists around the world are able to put tags on an increasing number of species, and it's really scaling up our study of animal movement, and more broadly than that, even sort of biodiversity use of our planet. So we can begin to think about a global monitoring system that's using animals as sensors. So you think about a single individual as a sensor that moves around the environment, and you knowing where it went at which time and under which conditions allows you to understand something about our planet, also about the habitats, about the health of our forests, or whether nature reserves are working or not.
So we're chatting with Walter Jetz from Yale. So, Professor, so for example, they said, and I remember this before the great tsunami that hit the Indonesian coast, that they reported that all the elephants went up, right? That all these animals seemed mm-hmm. to feel that the earth was going to shake and the tsunami was going to come before it did, before the people could tell. And so theoretically, that's the kind of thing as well that you could be tracking, right, in terms of animal movement.
Absolutely. So this is the technology that will give us, if you will, among scientists, that sample size, right, that sufficient number of, or the sufficient evidence, sufficient individuals tagged in a sufficient number of different places where these sorts of events eventually will happen. And it's through that we'll get confirmation whether indeed animals can be and are sensors of those sorts of events and conditions, and could potentially be almost unthinkable at this point, right? The potential use for humans of an animal-based early warning system around disasters. Now, there is already evidence here and there, but it's including from the lead investigator of the Icarus effort in Germany, Martin Wichelski. He's got sort of initial evidence that their animals do react not just to tsunamis. In his case, it was earthquakes in advance, before even our other sensors are able to pick up on things. And this technology will, over the next 3 to 5 years, I'm fairly certain, will tell us whether that's indeed the case and whether there will be that a really exciting potential additional use for an early warning system for humans.
So, Dr. Jetz, how's it going to be? I sound very naive when I say this, but I have a house and I have robins, right? And they're always nesting mm-hmm. in the front and back of my house. The minute I get too close, the robin runs away. Right? There's no way mm-hmm. I could get near a bird. How could a mm-hmm. scientist, how does a scientist tag a bird? How do you do it? Really, I mean how do you do it? They fly away. How do you do it?
Absolutely. You know, there are peculiar cases where you can actually almost by hand catch sleeping animals you'd be amazed among the experts you come across as a biologist. Some of the field biologists have devised amazing skills in catching individual mammals and birds. But wow. Mist netting is actually the main one, and it's been around for well over 100 years, actually. In the late 19th century, actually in Europe, some of the first large-scale bird banding stations went into operation, and they had huge nets beachfronts where waders would come through, but then some of these nets they're really thin, and you can put them up in the forest or in your garden for that matter and catch these birds. Obviously, you need a license. There's a whole review that goes around that, the animal welfare. But that essentially catches the bird, and then you can put a backpack on, or in some larger birds, we work with cranes. There are actually bands around the leg that you can use. Some of these tags actually have little solar panels on them to decrease the battery life yet further. And it's a whole interesting science in its own right, actually, and a technological development that's enabling now that scaled-up study of animal movements.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about, we're chatting with Professor Walter Jetz about the Icarus Project, about tagging our animals in a much more widespread, cheap, and efficient way in order to see how wildlife is moving around and ultimately save them. I couldn't help think that the way this article was written in terms of the public access, there are going to be some bad actors too. And, you know, if the people that are anti-poachers have this information, well, that's a good thing. But theoretically, the poachers could also have it and stake out where the elephant is. Have you guys thought about that? Have you thought about the fact that human beings are not always good, and maybe universal access to this information isn't always a good thing? Or on balance, are you thinking that the good people will hopefully, you know, get rid of the bad? I'm just, I was thinking about it, because there are some bad people.
Absolutely, you know. And it definitely needs to be on our mind. It's something that we think a lot about in these sorts of projects. I'm myself overseeing a project at Yale called Map of Life, which is about as detailed distribution information of species as possible, and that really extends to all sorts of threatened and rare species. And what we are doing, what conservation organizations that also work with that sort of information are doing, is to sort of identify, okay, which are the species that are most strongly potentially impacted and affected by poaching or other types of hunting or catching. And for those species, you would usually blur that information. You'd need a special access to actually get to see that information. So there are measures in place, and that's also certainly planned here. But the benefits here, that's just some due diligence you need to do. But don't underestimate the benefits of having that information. It's even possible and been shown that you can, near real time, get an alert if an animal with a tag got killed. So they're testing it out on elephants and rhinos in Africa, so that the tag would like send a signal when the animal sort of falls over in an unusual way, and that would allow the local squad to come in and see whether poaching was behind that. So they're real amazing direct conservation opportunities that are also arising from this.
I was really struck, Dr. Jetz, by this quote in the article that was said by Dr. Wilkelski. If people hear that Cecil the lion died, it's very real to them. But if you say 3,000 lions died, nobody cares. And that's true. That's the way the human brain works. When we focus on an individual and we name that individual, something about our brain has an affinity towards and more caring about.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, perhaps the most, in the public eye, most impactful way that this effort can have, that it will allow us to put a story and a better understanding around a larger and larger number of individuals that people can then connect with, can follow, may be able to see even somewhere as it's moving or migrating through their area. And thereby, if you're able to connect more people to the amazing individual lives that are playing out around us and that are in some cases getting affected by how we are using our planet, how we are changing the planet, I think that could be even more than some of the more direct insights around poaching, et cetera, that we were talking about earlier. I think this sort of public engagement may be one of the most exciting and important outcomes from this effort for the larger
I know, because we can't
of our planet.
Yeah, because we can't. We're chatting with Dr. Walter Jetz. You know, when I heard it was reported again in this article, but I've seen it, 1/3, they say, over 1 billion birds, for example, have disappeared from the planet in the last, I don't know, 30 years. Some crazy amount of birds, and that about 1/3 of those are due to the fact that birds are crashing into windows, okay? They're crashing into windows. They're attracted by night light. They're confused. And I thought to myself, well, I don't think people know that. Maybe we need to turn off more lights at night. I mean, there's so many possible applications of understanding our wildlife to be able to protect it better. It's just extraordinary what's going to be done here. Of course, I did think to myself, you know, I mean, I, as a human being, I don't like to be tracked. And I know that if I carry my iPhone, I'm carrying a tracker. And then I thought to myself, you know, these poor animals, we're going to be looking at them too. Do you know what I mean? Like, I anthropomorphize. Do you know what I mean?
It is interesting, we're taking away their privacy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, just begin to think about the privacy and ethics, if you will, of animals.
Right.
It's an interesting question, and I think there will be we'll bring up some interesting discussions in the future. But I would certainly put myself on the side of thinking if you're able to track a minor 0.00 whatever it may be percentage of birds, mammals, and through that are able to better monitor the health or the pulse of our planet, and that information allows us to make smarter and more informed decisions around what we should be doing, and at least not ignorantly impact biodiversity, I think then it's really, really worth it. And that's, I think, one of the main reason I'm so excited about Icarus and about this space-based opportunity of animal tracking and studying planetary biodiversity movement.
Well, thank you, Dr. Walter Jetz. So it's called Icarus, I-C-A-R-U-S. I know it's an acronym for a bunch of other things, but it is, in a way, applicable in a way, because you're getting up there towards the sun, you're up there in space, and it just seems like this fascinating, just amazingly long-sighted as opposed to short-sighted idea that if we can watch the animals, we can help save them and save ourselves. And all the impacts of global warming and shifting climates, you know, we can see why so many monarch butterflies disappeared. As you know, it's said in the article, what happens to the tortoises in that stage of development where they seem to disappear and then they come back? I mean, there's so much to know. It's wonderful, Dr. Jetz. I'm going to be reading about this with great continued interest. And thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Dr. Walter Jetz of Yale University, coming on the show today to talk with us about Icarus. You can look it up if you like, I-C-A-R-U-S, Icarus, the Wildlife Project. We'll be right back when we return with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.